Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune is with us once again for our parenting slot afternoon, Joanna. Right, first question is this. My daughter is 12. She's always loved school and she has lots of friends and gets on well with her work. She's a worrier and always has been. Plus, she doesn't do well with change. She's starting secondary school in September and the wind down to the end of sixth class has started. And the closer it is coming, the more anxious she's getting. She's going to a school that only two of her pals are going to. And there will be several different first year classes. She's afraid she'll be in a class on her own and she won't make new friends. She's worried she won't keep up in class, even though she's very bright. She tells me she thinks her teachers won't like her and she'll get picked on. She thinks she won't be good at sports as she's never had that much interest. I'm not sure where the worry has come from, and I've tried to calm her down and explain how fun new things can be, how change can be tricky for all of us, but in time it will feel more usual, but she can't seem to stop fretting and is winding herself up. She has always been an overthinker, but really was so good and happy and settled in primary school. The school is quite big, so she also seems intimidated by that. And her older brother is in third year and quite stressed about the exams and can sound quite negative about school, study and homework of late. But I'm sure that's what caused it. How can I get her to feel calmer and excited about the new start so she can cope and enjoy her summer holidays?
I mean, this is a good one.
She's not the only one, I suspect.
No, I think this is very topical, actually. And this is a very emotive and hyped up time in primary schools as well. There's a lot of last this, final that, you know, a lot of that kind of celebratory but closure stuff that's going on in primary school. So they're hearing it all the time. Also, peers are going to be talking about who got into what school and where they're going and all the rumours. You don't necessarily need a brother in third year. Those stories will get to you about certain teachers having reputations or schools and what it's going to be like. Now, a lot of words are used to describe this kid in this letter. You know, she's anxious, she's stressed, she's a worrier, she doesn't like change. I would reframe all of that and say she's sensitive.
Yeah.
And I think it covers everything that we're reading here, Sean. I think this is a kid that's just everything that's going on that all of the kids around her are also dealing with. She's dealing with it at a deeper level. And she's trying to picture what will it be like? Because if you can picture it and you can picture yourself in it, there's a degree of mastery in that. Okay, I can anticipate what this is going to be like. This is a lot of unknown. And only last week we were talking about how, you know, you move from being the biggest in the small school to the smallest in the really big school.
Yeah.
And I know it'd be easy for me to sit here and say, contact the school and ask if she can be put in a class with at least one of the two pals going. But the truth is, we'd be talking about maybe her form class at the start of the day. She'll be moving classes and subjects and things like that. As adults who've been through secondary school, we know that, of course, she will make new friends. She will get on with people. They are well used to integrating first years into the secondary school community. They'll do activities and icebreakers and get to know each other, and they'll pair them up so they get to know new kids. And it's a great opportunity. But all of that at the moment is too solution focused. I think it runs the risk, as this parent is doing, because nothing this parent has done is wrong per se.
Yeah.
But I think it's too soon. It's too right too soon. And I think you just need to let it feel a bit wrong for a while. I think you have to give her a chance to exhale all of the feelings, all of them. Don't minimize them. Don't rescue her from them. Don't dismiss them. If it's lingering, and I think it might now. So when I say lingering, I mean into the summer after primary school has ended. You could get her, sit with her now, don't have her do this on her own, and write down all of the feelings on individual scraps of paper, all of the worries. What if, what if, what if? And then put them in a jar and tell her you're going to look at three a day. And you're going to do it in such a way that you say, okay, read it out loud. Then you read it back to her so she hears her own words. Then you say, is there evidence for this worry? Like, is it based on a truth or just on something you're imagining? And if there's evidence, let's think about it. Who could help? What will we do about it? And make a plan of action. And if there is no evidence for it, then we let it go. You put it in the let it go pile and you burn those or flush those or do whatever it is you want to do with those. But you get rid of the let it go ones. I think you have to acknowledge, though, with her, the enormity of everything that's going on. This is a massive change and it does need to be acknowledged, and empathize with her that finishing up is a big deal. And big deals come with big feelings.
Yeah.
And change is really difficult. And she's allowed to be sad that primary school is ending, and she's allowed to worry about something that's new. You know, just validate a lot of that for her. because these are unfamiliar experiences. And what I would say, and I would say this to any parent who has somebody starting secondary school, if you have any schedule flexibility or time that you can play around with, take some time off, the first couple of weeks of school, that's when to do it.
Yeah.
Be there at the beginning and end of the day.
Yeah. It often feels, and I know it, like kids are getting to the end of sixth class and the school itself wants to kind of acknowledge that. But for a lot of those kids in sixth class, it can feel like this is the end of your childhood almost.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a line here where you have to be a different person.
It is enormous and it's overwhelming actually for a lot of them. You're absolutely right. Of course, it should be marked and there should be a little celebration of, you know, everything they've achieved and experienced in primary school, and a closing piece where some of them won't see each other in school next year. They're not disappearing off the face of the earth now, but they won't see each other all the time. And then it really does need to be framed in positive terms that this is a new adventure, a new chapter, an opportunity. There will be new things to learn. If anything, I would, and because you have a son in the school, you'll be aware of this, just get to know what kind of extracurricular things are happening within the school community. I do think, particularly for kids who are especially sensitive and worried about starting, it is really good to have them sort of go, well, I could join the basketball team.
Yeah.
Or I could, and just know what's there so that they are integrating into the school community beyond classroom time. So finding out what kind of activities the school are offering, even if they're ones that your son isn't doing, you'll still be aware of what's on and just highlight it. You love this. You could join this. This would be really good for you. And it's another way of just in helping her to make new friendships because she'll be with kids who have shared interest with her.
Mm, yeah. And I suppose it's, this is more of a kind of an issue that you'll see in towns or big towns and cities where, you know, you come out of national school and there is a choice about what.
Yes.
There are parts of the country where everybody just goes to the same secondary school and it's less complicated that way. That in itself seems to be a fraught process for the parents, because even before sixth class, the kids are asking, well, what school am I going to?
Absolutely.
My friend Mary's going this one. John's going to the other one. Mm-hmm. How do we make that decision?
Is there a formula?
Is there a formula? Yeah. Is there an easy way of doing that?
I mean, a lot of it is availability, even in towns.
Yeah.
You know, you're putting your name down. It's a roll of a dice and you're seeing, you know, some communities will tell you what school you're going to. You put your name down and the schools together collaborate on that, I guess, to stop parents holding spaces in multiple schools when everybody needs to get a place. I think you do that research as a parent. It starts way before sixth class. You know, you're thinking, where will be good for my kid? Where will my kid do well? What's going to suit them in terms of schools independent focus? You know, are you going with an English or Irish speaking school? Is it going to be mixed or is it a single sex school? You know, all of those decisions are happening way before you're putting the name down.
Because in this question, she only knows two people going to the school. Is that a factor that should be taken into account?
I mean, look, it wouldn't be my deciding factor, because I think you have to centre your own child and what they need and what environment they're going to thrive in. I think if they have pals that going with them, of course, that's going to help and ease the transition. But, you know, Sean, I'd also say kids are going to grow up. Who they are in sixth class
you
is
could get
not
dumped in first class.
Exactly and I think it is an opportunity to make new friends and broaden out that social circle and meet kids that are beyond the sort of careful, curated little bubble you've had through primary school. I think that's a big part of it. So it certainly wouldn't be a deciding factor for me. I would see it rather as a bonus if it happens to be that your child is going to transition into new school with kids they know, and that's a good thing for them. But I would never say, I'd love them to go to this school where I think they will thrive, but they won't be going with any kid from school, so I'll send them somewhere else. No, send them where you think they will thrive.
I'm finding one of my children a bit difficult at the moment. I've tried gentle parenting, etc., but I'm at my wit's end. She's 8, but has the attitude of a 16-year-old. Along with her sisters, I've decided I have to follow through with my threats. So we have an occasion in a few weeks, and if they are misbehaving, I just give them a mark, and they've been warned at 10 marks they will not be coming to the party. I have two in particular that don't seem to care, and both are on their last chance. My husband says I have to follow through. The two on the last chance actually rolled their eyes and said, sure, we know we're going to the party. What do I do? The other three children have lost no points because they follow instructions and do their jobs. I'm really struggling to keep my patience and trying to bargain with them. My husband says they are absolutely not going to the party if they lose their last point, and he's happy to stay at home with them to prove that point. Of course, I feel guilty. They are the second and third child in the family. I don't know if this matters.
It doesn't.
No.
And yeah, when someone says I've tried the gentle parenting, etc., that has a feeling to me of I've done a bit of this and a bit of that, and I've tried a bit of, you know, the little kind of social media sound bites I hear about these things, because gentle parenting would be an immersion thing. You would be still doing it. That's not the issue here either, though.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, the issue here is follow through and lack thereof. And it's a really good reminder to all of us as parents, do not set a consequence that's going to cause you stress at the end of it.
Yeah.
If you feel, oh, I really do want them all at that party, you should never have made that the consequence.
Yeah.
There are plenty of things you could have done, but you did choose this. And so now, yes, you have to follow through with it. The one thing with these kind of, what I don't know what she's called, the charts, you know, this whole, if you get marks that you don't do something and you get 10 marks, you're not coming to the party. I do like to modify. I'm not a big fan of those kind of behavior chart systems. I think once you get the 9 marks, there's very little motivation to not go full throttle and call your bluff.
That's
and see.
True. Yeah.
I do think if you're doing something like that, try to build in an opportunity for repair and recovery.
Yeah.
So if I have a bad day, because we're all allowed to have a bad day, and I clock up a few marks because, you know, I'm on a roll that day and I'm just churning out the insults and clocking up the marks, give me the chance to earn them back.
Yeah.
So
okay.
that I can actually pull it back and say, okay, look, I've had a couple of bad days. I can turn this around. And because that's really what we want from those systems, is that children are learning from them and becoming better able to self-regulate their behavior and feelings, and the feelings that underpin the behavior. And I'm also thinking about your other three children who've lost no points. And I'm thinking, well, if I was one of those three children, and we've all been told marks mean not going to the party, and then you do let my two siblings with the 9 or 10 marks go to the party.
Yeah.
I don't think that's very fair or respectful either. So I would also pick up on this word bargaining. I had a little flinch when you said it there. No, we don't bargain. That's not what you're doing. Boundaries and limit setting are not bargaining. They're flexible. They can bend without breaking, but you don't go, okay, I hear your invitation to this and let me come back at you with that. You're not bargaining with an 8-year-old. First of all, they'll absolutely run rings around you at that age, but it's not what boundaries are about. Boundaries and limits help children to feel safe, to feel safe in the knowledge that there is somebody, you know what John, it's the basic premise actually of attachment theory that John Bowlby would have talked about, that there is somebody stronger and wiser who will stop me and my behavior in the situation from getting out of control. And you do that without saying it. That's why a boundary is there and why it works. So if you set a boundary and then you are inconsistent, you're not safe and predictable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
while children will run riot with that power you give them, it isn't good for them.
Yeah.
They will thrive when it's actually clear, calm, consistent boundaries and limit settings. So follow through, but do so calmly. There doesn't have to be a big, well, I did warn you and look at this. You're not going. It's not a shock to them. You've been really clear that 10 marks means you're not going. So when they hit the 10, you're saying you're not going. And if they're coming at you whining and whinging, you can say, I know you're upset and it is upsetting, but we had an arrangement.
Yeah.
End of. That's it.
Yeah.
And they will promise you the sun, moon and stars to get to that party. And you have to hold the boundary and say you get to make a different choice the next time. But this time you're not going to the party.
Yeah. There's an episode of that TV show, The Middle, that's a million years old. But there's one episode.
I saw it.
The 16-year-old has he was really annoying and a slob, but he won't tidy up after himself. So the dad says, right, you're not playing in your next basketball match, which happens to be the last game of the season, and the entire town is invested in it. And so all the other parents are saying, why did you say that thing to him? You
know? It's a really good example of it, though. If the stakes are too high, then don't set that as the thing, because you're thinking, oh, well, that'll motivate them to change. Absolutely. That motivates them to call your bluff.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the end, he's kind of, if he just say sorry to me, and of course he's dropping hints and the kid doesn't take the hints.
Yeah.
And then eventually the kid says, sorry. He says, that's sorry. That's good enough for me. Go off and play. Terrible parenting. My 6-year-old boy is currently awaiting an autism assessment. He recently had a school observation and the psychologist reported some slight social differences. but described him as being very social and empathetic and said he seemed to have lots of friends. School don't have any concerns at the moment, but he's very bright, so school is not very demanding academically for him. It sounds like he will likely get the diagnosis, though. I've noticed some things, such as he can misinterpret people laughing with him as people laughing at him. He can get upset if his sister won't play with him and thinks it's because she doesn't like him and finds it hard to move on from this. Can miss some non-verbal cues and sometimes miss what's going on. He can sometimes take phrases from TV and use them in conversation, although in the right context, they can seem a little unusual. He often won't see any difference between speaking with an adult and a child and will use the same tone of voice. He's generally a very happy child when these situations come up, and I try to talk them through and see through his perspective of the other person, as well as acknowledging it's confusing, and we try to practice what he could say back. Are there any nice resources you could recommend that would be great? There's so much autism, it's hard to know where to start.
It is. And you know what's really hard? It's hard to wait. And I think that's what this really brings up for me, because this assessment is ongoing. And I'm really slow to kind of say, here's what you should do, because actually you haven't had the outcome of this assessment, even if you're thinking and how you've detailed here that on the balance of probability or possibility, but probability you'll get a diagnosis. You know, one autistic person's diagnosis is their diagnosis. It is not like every other person who has autism gets the same diagnosis. That's not how it works. So what I would say, hard as it is, and I really do think and acknowledge that it's hard, it is best to wait until you get the outcome, because the psychologist who is doing this assessment will sit with you or on the phone or whatever way you're doing it, and they will go through that report with you. They will explain what different outcomes, different points of the assessment have meant, what that's going to mean for your son, and what would help, and what, and there will be tips and guidelines and suggestions as to what you can do. And that will be curated around your individual son and his needs. So that's going to be best that you do that. I mean, I do think, you know, while you're going through this and waiting, resources, of course, you've As I Am, you know, their website in and of itself is a great resource. And as an organization, to reach out to them and have a think and a talk, you know, that's a really good thing to do. There are so many books in this area. Like, if you're a parent and you just put that into a search engine, you are going to get so many books. And again, some of the books are not going to describe your son at all. Yeah, and one or two of them will. So again, go to your library and do a lot of reading. Go, nope, 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 nope. And then finding one that is. A couple that I do think are good. There's one by Louise Gooding called Wonderfully Wired Brains. And Neve Garvey, her book Being Autistic is actually a really useful resource as well. Now, you're not going to just hand those to your six-year-old and say, flick through those and that'll explain everything. But as a parent, they can be really helpful at giving you a language and a framework to understand that. So you could do that, I think, just to give you something while you're waiting. While you are waiting on the assessment and a lot of what is in this letter, I would say play. Play in the meantime and keep playing. Play around social skills, emotional expression, writing half phrases on Jenga blocks I've mentioned before. Mm. You pop those out and you finish that phrase. Story cubes, you know, the little storytelling dice, just having it, getting a bit of imaginative storytelling, turn-taking, reciprocity, reacting to what little curveballs you introduce into the story, doing a bit of serve and return. All of that is just going to be, in general, a helpful thing to do. And by putting onto things like Jenga blocks with a Sharpie, make an excited face, make a sad face, he's getting to, you're doing it too, not just him, but he's getting to see different expressions and what they mean. And he's also working out his and seeing, oh, there are lots of ways to show a happy face. Mm. It's not just one way.
Yeah.
And also just encouraging him to ask.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that funny? It's okay to say to someone, why is that funny? I don't get it.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thank you.
As ever, Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.